The following program is being brought to you on the Seventh Wave Network. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit SeventhWaveNetwork.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
The following program is for informational and educational purposes only. This program does not replace medical diagnosis and treatments prescribed by your personal physician. Please consult your doctor for diagnosis and medical care before beginning or changing any program or idea discussed.
Welcome to Frame of Mind with your host, Terry Sue. If we learn to live and think healthier, we begin to explore and focus on our strengths. Once we determine what our strengths are, we can use those gifts and talents to help others to heal. Helping others fosters congeniality. Congeniality facilitates peace and love. Now, here's your host, Terry Sue.
Welcome to Frame of Mind. I'm your host, Terry Sue, and today my guest is Donald Altman, author of 1 Minute Mindfulness, a book that provides its readers with 50 ways to find peace, clarity, and new possibilities in a stressed-out world. Donald Altman is a practicing psychotherapist, former Buddhist monk, Emmy Award-winning writer, and vice president of the Center for Mindful Eating. He is known for the way he makes mindful living and spiritual values accessible through his writings and workshops. Donald Altman is currently an adjunct professor at Lewis and Clark College Graduate School of Education and Counseling, where he teaches the contemplative dimension in education and counseling. He is also a faculty member of Portland State University's Interpersonal Neurobiology Program. A prolific writer, Donald's most recent book is 1 Minute Mindfulness, 50 Simple Ways to Find Peace, Clarity, and New Possibilities in a Stressed-Out World. He has written several other highly acclaimed books, including The Mindfulness Code, Strategies for Overcoming Stress, Anxiety, Fear, and Unhappiness, which was selected as one of the best spiritual books of 2010. He has also authored the pioneering Mindful Eating books, Art of the Inner Meal and Meal by Meal. Donald has also written for television and documentaries and has had numerous articles appear in print. He travels the country training professionals and individuals in mindfulness. He's a member of the Burma Buddhist Monastery Association. So welcome, Donald.
Oh, well, thanks, Terry Sue. Appreciate being on the show, and I love the opportunity always to help people think about ways that they can get more fulfillment and joy in the moment, in that next 1 minute.
Well, I have to say, I love your book because I kind of carry it around with me every now and then. And particularly, I take it to meetings with me if I think that something is striking me about how we need to stop and kind of be thankful for the things that we have rather than looking for the things that we want. Because a lot of times we find that what we want really isn't necessarily what we might need. And what we need, we have right in front of us if we just take a minute to look at that. So
that's a beautiful statement that you just made. I like that a lot.
Yeah, so I want to ask you, because I love it so much, what inspired you to write this book?
Well, this is really an extension of work I've been doing for many years, and in delving deeply into exploring our own consciousness and what makes the human being tick, and how can we reduce suffering in the world? How can we overcome a lot of the maladies and ills that affect us in a time when we have a lot of wonderful potential, we're under so much stress, and it's really damaging us at the cellular level. And so what I wanted to do with this book was to show people, and I think it's reflected in the title, the one-minute mindfulness, that you can do this, mm-hmm. and you can do it in the next minute, because when you really think about it, the next minute is really the time that you have the most control over. That's the time when you're really contacting whatever's happening in your life. And, you know, if you're ruminating about the past or anxiously worrying about the future, those may be things that you can't do much about. What you can do is really be present in this moment. And so what inspired me was wanting to help people find the truth of this next minute and to see that it really does matter, and mm-hmm. how they contact this next minute can change their life and transform their life into something with greater possibility than they ever imagined.
Starting with the time that you wake up, you're lucky that you're breathing. You're blessed to be breathing.
Absolutely.
And that your eyes opened in the first place.
That's very true. My motto is, any day you wake up is a good day.
My mother says that. Oh, yeah. She's 85, and she says that often. I'll say, Ma, how are you today? And she says, any time I'm alive and well is a good day for me. So
yeah.
I love that.
I think what you're kind of referring to maybe was the first one of the first chapters, which is called Morning Awakens, where it's really about just noticing all the things that are present in the morning that often just go by unnoticed, mm-hmm. with just because we're kind of waking up or because we're on autopilot. And when we go into autopilot, we kind of miss the view of everything that's around us. So really miss just feeling the sense of the body or noticing how the water in the shower is, how it's cascading down on us, what it sounds like. And maybe it's a very pleasant sound that we can experience. How can we stretch? How can we start to inhabit the body in the morning in a very kind way? And how can we not fall into the habit of just all of a sudden having that giant to-do list of mm-hmm. you know, the 101 things that we think we need to do today, and all of a sudden our body is in a tense state? And
you
so,
know what, Donald?
Yeah.
If you take it a step further, even as far as gratitude goes, there are some people, and I didn't even realize that until maybe about 10 years ago. I didn't realize that there were people who don't have that sense of touch. They can't feel. And there's one more thing that you have to be thankful for, because that's our body's protective mechanism, one of, that warns us whether or not mm-hmm. we're healthy, whether or not we're feeling the things that we need to feel in order to keep us healthy and strong. So you can really be so busy being grateful for all of the things that you have that you can run out of time and go forever doing that. So it's a wonderful
thing. Yeah,
wonderful thing to think about. And if you begin each day, I know I do. I begin each day with gratitude, because you start off thanking God for your many blessings, and then you can go into meditation, which is listening to those responses. And it has done me a world of good over the years, I must say. And back to the beginning, I really like the way your book has been organized and divided into parts for easy reference, because you start off with 1 minute mindfulness for home and play. And I like the way that you include suggestions for ways to remain focused on the minute, so that as you go throughout the day, you know, if there are things that maybe aren't going right for you, well, okay, what is going right for me? Where can I start from, or how can I make that better? I just love it. I just love it. Is there any particular... Is there any particular way that you would like for readers to use this book?
Well, I think you pointed out something that was really good, is that what I want to do is to show people that one-minute mindfulness isn't, you're not adding anything extra into mm-hmm. your day. You're not having to create yourself another to-do list, right? But these are things that are already present. You're really integrating. You're really bringing a sense of wholeness to whatever it is you're doing. So, you know, part one is one-minute mindfulness for home and play. Things like when you wake up in the morning, getting in, experiencing the body. Like you said, you know, that's a something to be grateful for, that we can sense the body and we can listen to it. We can know the signals that it's sending us, if it needs food, if it needs more sleep, whatever that happens to be. And I have things like, you know, reorganizing your routines.
Yes.
You know, becoming more aware of each little thing that you're doing. You know, how do I say goodbye or say hello to someone in my life, you know, on a daily basis and make that moment count? How do
Which brings me to one of the parts in your book that where you talk about I-thou kindness. Is that the same as sending it? Is that the same as sending out good karma?
You're really shifting the relationship into just viewing another person as more as an object or something that happens to be in your environment and you have mm-hmm. to deal with. To the I-thou is that the other person becomes, how would I want to be treated by this person?
Right.
And how am I coming into communion with them, really, into a sense of unity, a sense of understanding and peace, and how can I nurture that in another person? So, you know, I have a whole section in the book on one-minute mindfulness for relationships and love.
Yes.
So that people could kind of tap into that. I have a section on one-minute mindfulness for work and creativity. And a lot of us could use mindfulness at work. I've had people, you know, as a psychotherapist, I've worked with people who their workplace was so sad because mm-hmm. of layoffs and everything that mm-hmm. the person I was working with, he would go there and he would cry every day. Mm-hmm. And he was demoralized. The whole workplace was.
Yes.
So we had to help him find, even in, no matter how stressful your workplace is, there are ways that you can find meaning and joy and purpose there. And then what he did was he brought that, he rediscovered that and brought it back to other people who were having a hard time and helped raise the morale in the mm-hmm. office. So it was kind of really cool. So
yeah.
Then I have a section in the book on one-minute mindfulness for health and well-being,
mm-hmm.
and which is important for how we take care of ourselves and everything from exercising to eating moderately and finding, you know, a sense of creating a sense of peace in wherever your environment is. Then I have a section on one-minute mindfulness for nature, spirituality, and contemplation so mm-hmm. that we can learn how to slow down a little bit.
Yes.
And really
yes.
take a moment to kind of reflect on things. Sometimes we're going so fast, we don't get a chance to really think about, what does this mean?
Yeah.
What is this thing that just happened in my life? How could I bring that meaning into my life? How does that express my purpose, right?
Mm-hmm.
How, you know, so you can pause and you can ask some questions in 1 minute.
That's
that can
right.
change the trajectory of how you're doing things. That's choice, and that is freedom, right? If
so
you don't
true.
Have awareness, yeah, if you don't have awareness, then you don't have choice. And so I think the whole other, you know, aspect of one-minute mindfulness is to bring awareness to you and to your day and allow you to make the choices that you would make if you had the time to think about it, even for a minute.
Yes. Well, right now it's time for us to take a short break, so hold that thought because I'm going to come back to many of those points that you made. So this is Terry Sue with my guest, Donald Altman, author of the book 1 Minute Mindfulness, and you're listening to Frame of Mind on Voice America Seventh Wave and Health and Wellness Channel. Stay tuned.
The Voice America Seventh Wave Channel.
Is there a difference between dream work and intuition? The relationship is closer than you think. These are mutually supportive concepts. When you dream, your intuition serves as a foreshadow of the future and can bring rapid results through dream analysis. Tune in to The Partnership of Intuition and Dreams with your host, Dr. Marcia Emery. Explore this unique relationship and learn to understand how the symbolism of dreams can be clarified. Listen every Thursday at 5 p.m. Pacific Time, 8 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America 7th Wave channel. Ask Theo Live is talk radio like you've never heard before. Following her near-death experience, world-renowned author and spiritual medium Sheila Gillette became the direct voice channel for Theo, a consortium of 12 archangels. Through this unique channel, Sheila and her co-host Marcus Gillette present you with an opportunity to speak directly with Theo live on air on any topic you wish to discuss, including receiving authentic messages from deceased loved ones and angelic guides. Get the answer you need by tuning in to Ask Theo Live Talk Radio. Tuesday mornings at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, 11 a.m. Eastern Time on 7th Wave Network.
The Voice America 7th Wave Channel. Be extraordinary. Be the change. Tuned into Frame of Mind with your host, Terry Sue. If you have a question or comment for our host, or just want to find out more about our program, please email terry.suehill at yahoo.com. That's terri.suehill at yahoo.com. Now back to Frame of Mind.
Welcome back, everyone, as I continue my discussion with my guest, Donald Altman, author of 1 Minute Mindfulness. So, Donald, in that section where you talk about 1 Minute Mindfulness for home and play, you also refer to the brain being like Velcro and Teflon, Velcro being negative, things stick, and Teflon positive, just falling, you know, the compliments just, you know, kind of going by the wayside. But, you know, when I was writing those things down and preparing for the show, as well as when I was reading through the book, it made me think that, you know, that's kind of the body's own protective mechanism for something happening negative. You don't want to repeat that again. So it kind of sticks in your head. It's like when you're raising children and you tell the child that stove is hot and they don't really realize it's hot. Till they touch it, and then they go tell everybody, hot, you know.
Right. And they won't tell that one time, memory of touching the hot stove will stay with them their whole lifetime.
And just the same thing with a negative comment. You don't really want to hear that again. So you kind of zero in on that. When you hear positive things, yes, it feels good. But it's those things that hurt that you don't really want to repeat. So is that a way of your body kind of protecting itself with the negative and positive like that?
Yes, I think it is. And that is why the brain encodes negative memories in a much stronger way. And so what's important is that it takes a little extra work to remember the positive things in your life. And so that's why, by spending time noticing what you have gratitude on, by having a positive relationship with somebody and smiling at that coworker or that, you know, or you know, giving a hug to your partner when you leave home in the morning, that kind of those positive things, you know, it's like adding to the emotional bank account, right? And so it takes about five. The ratio, from what I've heard, is about 5 to 1. It takes about, if there's a negative event in a relationship, it takes about 5 positive ones to kind of erase the negative one. And so the brain requires more time and effort to make those positive memories enduring, and that's why I think it's well worth it to even, at the end of the day, write down the things that you have gratitude for so that you're not focusing on all the hassles that occur during the day, but that you could write down gratitude, and some people like a gratitude journal. And so that at the end of the week, imagine you go back and you look over these, and you're like, oh, yeah, that's right. All these things happened that were really nice. And this could be a very way to help make those positive things become less Teflon-like, mm-hmm. and that they can stick with us too.
And you know what? I used to keep a gratitude journal years ago, and I kept it, you know, pretty well for a while until I realized that I didn't need to keep it anymore because it became so deeply ingrained.
Oh, that's
good. I didn't have to even sit down and write those things down. When I am meditating in the morning or when I start out with prayer and gratitude, those are so, that's just part of the routine of just being thankful that I don't even have to write that down anymore.
It's, right, that's it's a really good point. Something. I think that's, so now it's just become embedded as
that's
part
right.
of how you see things. That's mm-hmm. good.
Yeah. And part two, moving on to part two of your book, which is entitled 1 Minute Mindfulness for Work and Creativity. When considering mindfulness for work and creativity, I notice you focus your attention on walking with dignity and grace as well as finding a purpose. How are the two related, walking with dignity and grace and finding a purpose?
Well, walking with dignity and grace is allowing yourself to really inhabit the body, right? And mm-hmm. it's allowing yourself to bring intention into your movement. Mm-hmm. So if you think about, for a moment, think about a time when maybe you weren't paying attention and did an accident happen. You know, when I was teaching a mindfulness workshop one time, and the lady, one lady who was in the workshop came back the next week, and she had a big bandage on her thumb. And I shouldn't have asked, but I did. I said, "What happened to your thumb?" And she said, "You know," she said, I was making a salad and I lost mindfulness. I was distracted and I forgot where my thumb was in relation to the knife."
Oh boy!
And
wow.
She was okay, but here, so she really wasn't being present and intentional in her body. Mm-hmm. You know, so you're there and you're chopping and you're really feeling the movement of the hand and the knife and, you know, and you're really there present and you're moving the vegetable through and there's not going to be an accident there. And that's intention you're set. You're really being very intentional. And I think that's also where that connects with really with purpose as well. Because mm-hmm. purpose says I'm going to be intentional in my life in how, you know, and maybe in the bigger picture, not just making a salad, right?
Yes.
But in the bigger, in the broader picture, what do I want out of my life? What's important to me? What values are important to me? What's my purpose even at this job that I'm doing? Mm. And how is it benefiting others? So it's you bring that same intentionality into the workplace, and it can shift how you feel. I mean, I've had people who were very there was somebody I remember I worked with who just wasn't happy with the work he was doing. He was trained in a very high-tech field, but here he was answering telephones, and he was kind of beating himself up for it. And what I did was we started talking about purpose, and I said, well, even though this isn't the perfect job for you, and maybe it's temporary, but what is it offering you now? And
yes.
how could it be of use, of value? And he realized that he was bringing something very important to people who he was talking to and helping people who were in difficult situations when he had to answer these calls. And he realized that his what he always wanted to do was to bring some benefit to people, and he could do it through this job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even knowing this wasn't maybe the ultimate job for him. And I'm not suggesting that you give up on your dream or that you resign yourself to what you're doing, but that mm-hmm. you could find purpose in what you're doing while you're also moving toward, forward to your ultimate work that you would like to do.
Yeah, so that goes right back to that whole, you hear a lot of people say, I know I have lately, focusing your attention on your intention so that you can see the value of everything that you do. You hear a lot of, I hear a lot of people again say, why does everything have to be for a purpose? Why does everything have to be for a reason? Well, if you just kind of do things haphazardly, you kind of lose sight of where your life is going. And a lot of times you can kind of, I guess, lose focus. You'll lose focus on what you're doing and just kind of live from day to day rather than living in each day. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I have a, and you know, that story that I just told you about that gentleman who I call William in the book here, I have that story in here. And I have a lot of stories of real people in 1 Minute Mindfulness, because I think how we think of our own life stories really makes a big difference, and it's important for us to understand our life stories. You know, I have a quote in that particular chapter on purpose that I'd like to share with you and your audience, too, and it's from an early 20th century writer and a painter who is a sculptor, too. Never graduated high school, but he had this incredible career. He was extremely creative. His name was Walter Russell. And he said, quote, "You must love anything you must do. Do it not only cheerfully, but lovingly in the very best way you know how." Mm-hmm. And he brought that into whatever it was he did and into every relationship that he had as well. And it really can help you find purpose, just bringing your heart and soul to whatever it is you're doing.
It's kind of a yin-yang reaction because, or cycle, because when you find purpose in what you do, people will find value in what you do. And when you find value in what you do, people will see the purpose of your actions.
Right, right. Yeah. So that's nice. It does.
Yeah, I really love that. Moving on, we don't have very much time for this particular one. We might have to take it into the next segment, but part three of your book deals with 1 minute mindfulness for relationships and love. And since this interview is in the month of February, I think it's really important that we talk about love in a different way, patience, trust, all of those things that have to do with healthy relationships and being able to communicate with one another, whether it's a boyfriend, a girlfriend, a husband, a wife, you know, any of a child, all of that has, we love people that are close to us. And so patience is one of the first things that you talk about. And why would you say patience is important in relationships and love? We know why it's important, but sometimes it's valuable to hear it just as well, just to hear.
Right.
Why is patience?
You know, patience is really at another level, a kind of a forbearance. It's kind of a grace that we give to another person. It's a gift that we give to somebody. And we give it voluntarily, we give it knowingly, and instead of giving someone our annoyance or our judgment or our harsh words, here we are on purpose deciding to give them forbearance. So maybe we're all flawed, we're all human, and we're all subject to some kind of frailty. And so knowing this, I can give this person this gift of forbearance, of patience, and the kindness not to be abrupt with them or harsh with them. And it really is an important gift to give. Right. I had a conversation one time, and I'll just make it quick. I was on an airplane, and I actually have this in the book. And I started talking about, stress and impatience with this couple that was seated next to me, and the man said, he says, "Well, I get impatient. I let people have it, and I'll just and I'll yell at them because it makes me feel better."
Uh-huh. Oh.
And his wife said, "Well, yeah, but it makes you feel better. But what about those people?"
That's right.
And so he wasn't able to understand the effects of what is happening. So when you don't give patience, you have to understand that. How is this really affecting someone? How have I felt when someone didn't give patience to me? Mm-hmm. What did that feel like? And how did that harm the relationship? And so this is about being thoughtful, and it's about really bringing awareness to understanding that even, you know, those little moments of impatience can have an effect.
Yeah, yeah. We're going to talk a little bit more about that, but right now it's time for us to take another short break. So this is Terry Sue with my guest, Donald Altman, author of the book, 1 Minute Mindfulness. And you're listening to Frame of Mind on Voice America Seventh Wave and the Health and Wellness Channel. Stay tuned.
This is the Voice America Seventh Wave Channel.
Being here with Ariel and Shia Kane is an ordinary person's guide to modern-day enlightenment. This show is an exciting exploration which opens the door to living in the moment. Don't miss being here. Tune in every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 noon Eastern with Ariel and Shia Kane right here on the Seventh Wave Network.
Yes, you can live a more positive and spiritual life. One step you can take each week is to tune in to What We're Thinking About with host Ken Ludwig. This program is designed to provide thought-provoking discussion after each week's show. Ken and his guests will challenge you to look at things in an entirely different way, to step outside the comfort zone and see the universe as it truly is. What We're Thinking About can be heard live every Thursday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Seventh Wave Channel.
Be visionary. This is the Voice America Seventh Wave Channel. Tuned into Frame of Mind with your host, Terry Sue. If you have a question or comment for our host, or just want to find out more about our program, please email terry.suehill@yahoo.com. That's terry.suehill@yahoo.com. Now back to Frame of Mind.
Again, welcome back, everyone, as I continue my discussion with Donald Altman on 1 Minute Mindfulness. Donald, before break, we were talking about patience and patience being important in relationships and love, but you also, in part three of your book, talk about trust and transparency. Well, first of all, what do you mean by transparency? And then how are the two related? Trust and transparency related. Yeah. Do they go hand in hand?
Okay. Well, when I think of transparency, I think of honesty, of directness, being direct with somebody, being able to state what your needs are and not to do it in a manipulative way or a passive or aggressive way, but to be transparent. And that, I think, can build trust. So if somebody knows what to expect, if you're really able to do that, transparency and honesty, I think that that is important for building trust, for building safety and security in a relationship, right?
Yes.
So if you're going to be late, you can call and you can say, oh, I'm going to be late coming home because this happened or that happened. So you're being... you're putting it out there in a direct way and helping the other person actually deal with any issues that they might have. I mean, everybody has some kind of concern or everybody's been hurt in relationships at some point in their lives, right? Mm-hmm. So we need to know how to make that healthier. And I think that, so it cuts both ways. The person who is trying to be transparent, and it's also, you know, how do you build trust? So, what I did in this particular chapter, which is called Trust and Transparency, and what I've done in different chapters throughout the book is I give you some short questions. They're very direct questions that can help you get some clarity about whether or not you're being transparent or having trust or whatever the 1 minute mindfulness area is. Mm-hmm. So, for example, become more transparent, you could ask yourself, what do I fear by being more transparent? What holds me back? There may be, may just be an old habit, for example, that keeps you from doing it. But sometimes asking the question can help you get a little more deeply, peel off one of the layers of the onion, so to speak. You know, how can I be more straightforward, less manipulative? What is the best thing that can come from being more direct?
So disclosure.
Ask yourself,
disclosure has a lot to do with that, too. I mean, when you hear some married couples and also, you know, just people who have been together for a while, and they'll say something like, if say, for instance, if they're having difficulty communicating with each other, one will say to the other one, well, you should know what I want by now, you know. Being able to read another person's mind, which may not necessarily be the case, and then that kind of frustrates the other one. And it all has to boils down to a lack of communication after a while, which may cause both to shut down altogether.
Yeah, and mind reading that you just talked about, I mean, that's a particular style of thinking that can lead to frustration for both parties.
Mm-hmm.
One person who believes that, why don't they know what I want, should be able to know, but the other person says, well, I can't read your mind.
Yes.
And so, noticing, for example, that you might have a particular thinking style that's getting in the way of transparency or getting in the way of disclosure. So it's, I think these are important questions to ask. And now I have a couple of some others. For example, you know, how can I express what I need to share with kindness and respect?
Yes.
So, you know, so if you need to say something, maybe you need to wait until you can say it in a kind way so it doesn't come out as anger or sarcasm or bitterness or however it might come out.
Yes, or in order to do it.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah. A lot of people would resent that as well. And another part, along with love, comes forgiveness. And forgiveness is often a hard thing to do, depending on what needs to be forgiven, what has offended the partner, the other person. Do you have any tips on how to forgive? It's because it is at times it can be more difficult than others. And
it's an interesting area because, I mean, even when I work with people around this idea, there are some people that just are very resistant to wanting to forgive. They feel that it somehow will excuse the injustice that was done to them, or maybe they feel it will make them weaker and they won't be as strong. And I think when people do forgive, they often do it because the anger that they're feeling or the resentment or that they're feeling toward the abuse they had or the abuser is really hurting them more than the other person. And they do it to relieve their own pain, let themselves out of the cell. It's almost like they've locked themselves in a jail cell of anger.
Mm-hmm.
And so they need to release that. So I talk about anger is definitely a process, and it can be a very slow process. But I think it's an important one to start thinking about and maybe asking, you know, what is, you know, I have some questions here for people, too. Like, you know, what is the depth of my anger and sorrow?
Yes.
How are they affecting my life? Maybe. So I think that's a good place to start. You know, what's the worst thing that would happen if in the next minute I decided to let go of my anger, even a little bit of it?
Yes.
And maybe the person who harmed me doesn't deserve forgiveness, but how would forgiveness benefit me and my other relationships, even letting go of the, you may not even have to tell the other. So there are a lot of interesting ways in which, you know, even the question, how does holding on to the story of anger and victimization make me feel? Am I keeping myself in the victim role by doing this?
Yeah, because a lot of times...
You might decide that, you know, I've been in this role long enough, it's time to move out of it.
Yes.
Sometimes just asking that question in the next minute can create some new ideas and allow you to move in a new direction. And, of course, it doesn't mean that you're forgetting or that you're condoning what somebody did.
Right. You can acknowledge that it did hurt you or whatever it was offended you and be willing to move on. You may not necessarily forget, but you can forgive so that you don't make that same mistake again. And so that you don't make yourself miserable in the process by holding on to grudges or, you know, being unable to let it go, so to speak. And I want the listeners to be aware that some offenses obviously are more grave than others. And it's very difficult to forgive a lot of times, but there are some little things that people just need to let go and move on from. And I think that we can discern, you know, the difference between the two, you know, the gravity of each or lack of. So in this month of February, when we're talking, it's very important for us to be mindful of the power to forgive and the liberating feeling that it gives us and opens us up to love each other even more. We know our strengths, we know each other's weaknesses, and we can just take it from there and work to heal on both sides, which will make us much more loving in the future. Don't you agree?
Oh, yeah, and I think that is probably one of the key areas of, and I talk about some affirmations for love in the book, and I think that's, when you think about it, the ability to open up the heart and to love is one of the most beautiful human experiences that we can have.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, part four. Now we move on into 1 minute mindfulness for health and well-being. And our health is very important to our survival. And yet there are those of us who take life and health, actually, for granted. So what are a couple of the parts of this section that you feel are the most important? And I'm just going to ask you to be a little bit brief because we certainly are going to continue this part, but we're coming up on another break. And so we'll continue with part four, but are there any favorites in there right
now?
Well,
I think the, I have one called, a chapter called The Inward Smile. And this is about smiling inwardly at the body, noticing the body, inhabiting, dropping into the body, getting out of the head that's often spinning with thoughts and concerns and worries, right? But coming into the body and really appreciating the body for all that it does for you on a daily basis, because I think it's very easy to be critical of the body and to be say, oh, it doesn't look as good as so-and-so, and I'm aging, and I'm this or I'm that, right? But really to think about all the miraculous and amazing things that your body does for you on a daily basis and to thank it, to send your deepest gratitude to it for that is can help change your relationship to how you think about your body.
All right, well, once
and
again,
so
it's time.
That's gratitude. That's gratitude for the body that we have.
Okay, and we'll come back to that as soon as we come back from break. But it's time for us to take another one. So this is Terry Sue with Donald Altman, and you're listening to Frame of Mind on Voice America Seventh Wave and the Health and Wellness Channel. So stay tuned.
The Seventh Wave Channel on the Voice America Network. It's time to deepen your spiritual awareness and enhance your relationship with God. Listen for Into the Mystic, a journey of self-awareness and empowerment with your spiritual pathfinder, Jennifer Elizabeth Masters. Jennifer shares her own personal spiritual journey and practices with you to help you deepen your connection to the divine. and ultimately become enlightened. Let Jennifer help you experience your inner radiance. Become a part of Into the Mystic every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America 7th Wave Channel.
What are your cards telling you? Aces are very independent. Twos can mean love to be paired. And an eight means a power card. The cards give us all the information that we need about love and relationships, and most importantly, our matches. To find out what your cards say, and so much more, tune in to Love, Relationships, and Destiny with your personal psychic, Adrian Miles, live every Thursday at noon Eastern Time, 9 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America 7th Wave Channel. Which cards are in your future?
Invite meaning and inspiration to your life. This is the Voice America 7th Wave Channel. You are tuned into Frame of Mind with your host, Terry Sue. If you have a question or comment for our host, or just want to find out more about our program, please email terry.suehill@yahoo.com. That's terry.suehill@yahoo.com. Now back to Frame of Mind.
And welcome back, everyone, as I continue my discussion with Donald Altman on 1 Minute Mindfulness. So, Donald, we were talking before break about the health of our bodies and our health in general is important to our survival, and yet there's so many things about it that we take for granted. And you were talking about some of this, or you wanted to talk about some of the sections in your book that you felt were the most important. So is there any particular favorite part?
Well, there's a couple I'd like to mention here. Well, are you talking about in part four or in part five?
This one's part four. I can tell you what I kind of like. You talk about something called pebble meditation.
Oh, I was going to mention that. That's one of my favorites, actually.
Okay,
yeah, it's called
Pebble.
And so I could guide your listeners through this, but this idea here of Be the Pebble is the idea that an anxious mind can be very turbulent, like a raging river, a lot of thoughts. And if you're on that river of thought, it can really disorient you. You could feel nauseated even. Very upset. How do you, and so how can we find a sense of calm? Well, what I'm going to have everybody do here is to use a word, and that's this metaphor. This word is like a pebble that you'll toss into the water. It will drop below that turbulent surface, go down, 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 and settle on the quiet, the still bottom surface, that the riverbed or the sand at the bottom of the ocean. And from that place, you get a pebble's eye view. The pebbles just sit there. They're not doing anything. They're not really trying to, get to that next meeting, right, or anything. They're just sitting there, just being present. And so having a word and choosing a word that can be kind of a calming way, almost like a little anchor and let's pebble that takes you down to the bottom. So I want everybody to choose a word that is not a word with a lot of associations, but a very maybe kind of a neutral word. It could be, sometimes people choose the word pebble, and they could visualize a pebble, and or maybe the word one or peace or calm. So find a word. I worked with a guy who was an avid golfer, and he liked the phrase bogey free, because that makes you doing good at golf. That was his pebble word. So what you do is you choose this pebble word and then find a place where you can sit, where it's kind of quiet, and then bring this word to mind. Not in an effortful way, but in a kind of relaxed, kind of gentle way, just repeat your word in your mind. And your mind will naturally go up to other things, and so You know, if you're a pebble, of course, fish are going to swim by. And so different thoughts are like fish that swim by. And there's going to be pretty thoughts. They're going to grab your attention. You're going to go look at those fish. But then just come back to the pebble word. Or there could be a fish that's kind of scary, scary thought, or maybe an uncomfortable feeling. That's the shark that swims by, right? And so you can watch that. But eventually that will disappear and just come back to the pebble word. If at any time, and I always tell people, at any time if you feel uncomfortable, you know, you can open your eyes. So do this for like 5 minutes and allow this to settle your mind down. If you continue to do this over time, it will kind of quiet that river of thoughts that you have at the surface of the mind, and you'll settle into this more quiet, peaceful, and tranquil state of mind. And so then,
is that the same way that you would use a mantra?
You could almost think of it like that if you wanted to. I mean, it is, you could use a mantra, actually, if you had one in this way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it reminds me of doing that. You know, when you feel your mind wandering, you come back to your mantra and... You know, that kind of helps you to clear all the other garbage away.
Yeah, it's a similar kind of a thought, you know, and I want people to know that this has been used in many, many different traditions. You know, there's the ancient, the Jesus prayer. Lord Jesus Christ, have mercy upon me. So that could be a phrase that somebody could say over and over. So you find that there are mantras in all different traditions. And if you're inclined to use, you know, more of a spiritual mantra, then that's great, too. But it could just be a more neutral word, something that doesn't bring up a lot of memories or associations, and that would just spin your mind off again, get your mind going. What we want to do is keep you with the word that you have, your pebble word or phrase.
I also want to talk to you about another part of Part four, where you talk about creating an island of peace. What are some of the things that we should keep in mind when creating that space for ourselves?
Well, there's a few things. One thing I think that can create an island of peace that I hear people talk about all the time. One is making an area that's free of clutter, even if it's one corner of your room. A lot of people with kids can't. It's hard to keep it orderly. But you could maybe take one corner, one area of your house or one room and have it set up in a very, you know, peaceful, orderly way that you like. Mm-hmm. Another thing is to control sound. Congestion from sound can come in a lot of different ways and be very upsetting. So this could mean... Maybe while you're having your dinner, you don't watch TV.
Yes.
And you can create an island of peace around the mealtime. Now, the nice thing about that is that you are, you know, if you're watching TV, you're going to be distracted. And studies have shown you're going to eat about 30% more food. Not only that, you won't even taste the food as much. So, so I think it's nice to... maybe you could put on some nice music or just some managed sound in a way that is helpful to you. And maybe also set some barriers with technology so that, for example, there are times when you don't get on the computer, right? There are times when you don't use your phone so that you can interact with the people face-to-face, the people who are in your world. And actually, that wires up parts of the brain. The interpersonal parts of the brain get wired when we really see people face to face and experience them in that way. And you know, I like technology. I mean, I think it's wonderful and it can help us do a lot of things. But we also need to know when to place some boundaries around it.
I agree.
So those are a few ideas.
I can't believe how fast the time has gone. I've just totally enjoyed our conversation together.
So did I. I really did, Terry Sue. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I wish we could continue, but I...
Well, all there we have it. We can do that. We can certainly do that. All right. But for now, I want to thank Donald Altman for sharing his insight and suggestions for living in the moment and being more mindful of any blessing we are graced with in our everyday lives. And if our listeners would like to find out more, Donald, how can you be reached?
You can go to my 1MinuteMindfulnessBook.com website. That's 1MinuteMindfulnessBook.com, or you can go to MindfulPractices.com, and that includes also information about work that I've done in the area of food and eating and other areas and workshops that I do. So anyway, it's been great, Terry Sue. I want to thank you again for what you're providing for your listeners and much gratitude to you. Thank you and many blessings. Cool.
And I want to thank you, my listening audience, for tuning into Frame of Mind today, and I hope that you've enjoyed your time together. And if you know someone who could be helped or served by this knowledge, please share it with them. And in the meantime, till next week, live in peace and love, everyone, and enjoy your day. Bye.
We hope that you've enjoyed our program this week. Please join your host, Terry Sue, again next weekend. We'll be here Saturdays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific Time, on Seventh Wave Network. Until then, focus on your strengths. Live and think healthier this week.
The following program is for informational and educational purposes only. This program does not replace medical diagnosis and treatments prescribed by your personal physician. Please consult your doctor for diagnosis and medical care before beginning or changing any program or idea discussed.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program, brought to you on the Seventh Wave Network. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit SeventhWaveNetwork.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.